You turn to Marketplace for the latest news about what's happening in the economy and how it affects you and your community. When you donate to support our nonprofit newsroom, you can also get something a little more tangible. We have a great lineup of donor thank you gifts right now. A shrinkflation mini tote bag, water bottles, mugs, hats, and a lot more. Contribute any amount to make a difference and pick up one of these gifts. Go to marketplace.org/donate.
Young workers plan to take McDonald's to court. Hello, and you're listening to the Marketplace Morning Report live from the BBC World Service. I'm Leanna Byrne. Very good morning to you. A group of young former McDonald's workers in the UK are planning to take the fast food chain to court, accusing it of failing to protect them at work. Earlier this year, a BBC investigation revealed a toxic work culture at the restaurant chain. Another 160 people have come forward with claims, including sexual assault, harassment, racism and bullying. I spoke to the BBC's Noor Nanji about the allegations she's heard from McDonald's workers.
A chap called Steve contacted the BBC in July, and he was concerned about what he said was a sexist and bullying culture at a store in the east of England where his two daughters worked. So one of his daughters, Izzy, is 18 years old. She's currently working at McDonald's. She still works there. And she says she's still witnessing disgusting behaviour months after our investigation went out. So Izzy said that, you know, male staff would openly talk about their sex lives in front of 16-year-old crew members. And she said it was just unacceptable. And her sister Liv also worked at the same store. She decided to quit in the summer. She said one of the senior managers was openly racist about a new employee who was Sikh. One thing that struck us from this family was just, you know, the very young age of McDonald's workers. McDonald's is one of the UK's largest private sector employers. It has more than 170,000 people working here. Three quarters of the staff are aged under 25. And for many of them, it's their first job. It is just worth saying that most of those workers are not directly employed by the company because McDonald's uses a franchise system, which basically means that individual operators are licensed to run the outlets and employ the staff.
Yes. And how has McDonald's responded to this?
So we put all of this to McDonald's, and McDonald's got back to us in a statement from Alistair McCrow, the UK boss, and he said that he was completely determined to root out any behaviour that falls below the high standards they expect of everyone at McDonald's. And he said that's why in July they immediately ordered measures to address the areas that they think they needed to strengthen, and that they also initiated a programme of independent investigations, auditing of the complaints processes, and in some cases, full discipline. Plenary hearings. He added that they are confident in the steps they've taken, but they are determined to understand what more they can do.
The BBC's Noor Nanji, thank you so much for joining us on Marketplace.
Thank you.
To Bangladesh now, where violent protests are happening because garment workers want better pay and conditions. Bangladesh is the world's second largest exporter of clothes, and most of the industry's workers are women. The BBC's Anbarasan Etharajan explains what's behind the protests.
In the last 5 years, the food prices have tripled. That is why the workers are on the streets protesting outside Dhaka, asking for this $205 minimum wage a month. I've spoken to many of the garment factory owners. The first thing they will say is, if the Western global fashion brands, if they can offer more, even 10 cents, 15 cents per t-shirt, then we can pass it on to the workers. Now, why orders are moving from China to Bangladesh is because of the low cost of labor. For example, in China, the same work, the worker might be getting about $350 a month, whereas now the Bangladeshi workers are talking about $75 to $80. So if you go to Oxford Street, one of the busiest shopping areas in Europe, you will find many fashion brands having clothes from made in Bangladesh. And these are the women, they stitch these clothes.
Anbarasan Etharajan there. Now, let's do the numbers. China's consumer prices have slipped back into deflation on October, and that's when junk goods get cheaper. China has struggled with weak demand and hasn't really ever fully recovered from the pandemic. And the Japanese-based investing giant SoftBank, which has invested in WeWork, made an unexpected $6 billion loss. The French government is hosting a conference in Paris today to discuss how to get humanitarian aid to people in Gaza. Israeli airstrikes have destroyed bakeries in Gaza, and the remaining few struggle to operate because of fuel and flour shortages. BBC Arabic's Adnan Abourosh visited a bakery in Khan Yunis in southern Gaza. The BBC's James Graham has the report.
Long lines and frustrated families. These scenes are an everyday sight outside Gaza's bakeries. I spend 4 or 5 hours and at the end I only get one portion of bread. I have 30 people to provide for. How is one portion enough for them all? We're living on one meal a day now.
The United Nations says it's now common for people to wait for hours, and even then there's no guarantee there'll be bread. Bakers work around the clock, mostly with flour supplied by the UN. Non-governmental organisations also help where they can. But with so many people being told to move to South Gaza, the pressure here is getting worse.
The amount we produce is not even enough for a third of the people who need it. But we are producing an enormous amount in comparison to our usual work in normal times.
Abia Itefa is from the UN World Food Programme.
Bread is the last staple food option for people in Gaza. And most of the supplies are gone, especially that also there is no fuel. 50% of homes in Gaza have been destroyed. So people don't have access to cooking facilities. If you give them a box of, pasta or, dry food rations, they'll not be able to cook it.
Bread plays a vital role in feeding Gaza's hungry population. It's the most filling and the cheapest option, so bakeries are a lifeline. But with the bombardment continuing across the Gaza Strip, the lines outside the remaining bakeries are only likely to increase. I'm the BBC's James Graham for Marketplace.
Now, did you know there's a science to creating a menu to get people to spend more? Sean Willard of Menu Engineers says one trick is putting some options in a box.
We work with everyone from independent restaurants, mom and pop shops, up to global chains. What we first need to do is kind of look back at their data and recipe costs. We chart out profitability and popularity. A lot of this is dictated by how we read a menu, and we track this through eye tracking technology. The top right tends to be a sweet spot in general. Other people make decisions a little bit more quickly, so we'll try to use different tools like a box, or we'll place it prominently in the order of a given category. And what we see first and what we read last tends to play a significant factor in how we purchase.
Sean Willard there, and for more, check out the latest episode of The Food Chain by the BBC World Service. And I'm Leanna Byrne with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
Hey everyone, it's Rima Khreis, host of This Is Uncomfortable. If you're looking for some good recommendations on books to read, well, you should join This Is Uncomfortable's Summer Book Club. Every other week in our newsletter, we'll share a new book that'll make you rethink your relationship to money, class, and work, while also featuring an interview with the author or an expert on the topic. Plus, when you join, you'll be entered in a giveaway where you could win some This Is Uncomfortable merch. Be sure to check it out. Sign up today at marketplace.org/bookclub.